Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for 6 years.
The Bears. The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
Great mustache.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause, the mustache.
Wani, hanging out with Molly and Haw every Tuesday.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E.
Dave Wannstedt.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. It's interesting, David, because I think as we start talking about where the Super Bowl might have gone and what could have been different, I don't think anybody really has talked about the idea that if you hit that touchdown pass and you make it 7-3, how does that game change? What happens? I mean, I still think they end up winning.
If the Rams complete that pass,
yes,
it is not knocked away
right
at the last moment.
Because when you think about it, you're talking about the great thing that New England has going for them is that they don't seem to panic or get any kind of have any sort of issue in the big moments. They seem to be able to handle the pressure of the game. And that, as much as anything, is one of the signatures of this particular dynasty, the idea that you have a you have a head coach that has a great ability to put other teams in an uncomfortable spot and make them feel like they're doing things that they don't want to do, they can't do what they want to do, and then his team doesn't feel that uncomfortable in those same spots.
I don't think they would have felt uncomfortable trailing 7-3.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't think that would have been a factor.
Right.
It might have changed the final score, may have changed a few people's Super Bowl boards, but I don't think it would have affected the outcome.
Would we remember the game better if there had been
an offensive touchdown by the Rams?
Well, just, 13-3.
I mean, maybe. No, but 13-10 and 13-3, you're still going to look at it as a disappointing game that fell short of the offensive expectations. I think that's the way a lot of people, the majority of America, will remember that game. The ratings will reflect that. But I think a lot of people appreciated the fact that the Patriots, defense made a statement and Bill Belichick outcoached Sean McVay. And that's, they're going to look at that as being the defining moment. Look, did you see yesterday Julian Edelman taking the victory lap and going
that
to Disneyland
surreal
and everything?
That was really weird.
But Bill Belichick talking about how they discovered him. He's a 7th round draft pick out of Kent State as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And he was recommended to Belichick by Dallas Morning News writer Rick Goslin. How often do you see a Super Bowl winning coach, any coach, credit a sports writer with a tip on a player?
Well, he's not just a sports writer. Goose is something different altogether. And I think that...
Yeah, but he's a sports writer.
I know, but he's more than that. I mean, the guy used to do his own draft. And I mean, it was extraordinary to watch him because he picked his own board, did his own draft, and he would literally be the most accurate person doing it. All these draft nicks and all these other guys. It was
the mock draft
that actually put together the mock draft. Yeah. Let's get to Coach Wannstedt. We're delighted as always to talk to Dave. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Morning, Dave.
I'm great. Everything is good. I said this during the Super Bowl. I said there's only a few cities in the country that would enjoy a 13-3 game. Chicago's one of them, I said the Bears and the Steelers, they do not mind a 3-point game.
How about Miami?
Oh, please. Are you kidding me? We were winning 10-7 and people were booing us. They'd rather have us lose in Miami and score 35 points than win by a field goal, Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dave, what's the takeaway from that game? Do we look at that game? There wasn't a lot of scoring. There certainly wasn't a lot of great quarterback play. There was good defense, and it was one of those games that you just sort of look at and say, "Hey, what the heck happened there?" But I don't know. What's the takeaway?
Well, mine was one that obviously the defense, as you mentioned, you know, Belichick, the biggest concern I had, I mean, think about this, guys. The Rams were led the NFL in big plays, meaning passes over 20 yards, runs over 10 yards. The longest pass play that the Rams had was 24 yards. I mean, I was concerned about the big plays of the Rams. Belichick and them, they came up with a plan to take away the big play. You know, the big plays came off a play-action pass, which came on first and second down. He talked about how they were going to, you know, put a lot of pressure on them, take away the run, and take away the big play on first down. And then when they got in third down, he really wasn't concerned in my mind about Goff throwing it as much.
Right.
You know, they doubled their best receiver, Cooks. They put Gilmore on the second receiver, Woods. They took him away. And, you know, so that I thought it was a really good plan, you know, by the Patriots to keep the ball in front of them and not give up the big plays. It almost sounds too simple.
Well, Dave, you know, I think when you scouted Jared Goff coming into this game, obviously Bill Belichick decided early on they were going to play a lot more zone coverage because he struggled against zone defenses, and their big plays came against primarily man coverages. So they disguised the looks. They did what they did, and they confused Jared Goff. They also played six DBs and five pass rushers, which was, I think, a really good use of their athleticism up front. My question would be, and I don't think there is an answer, why, if Sean McVay is as brilliant as he is, and I think he deserves a ton of credit, was there never the counter move? There was never an adjustment to the way that the Patriots decided to and locked into and committed to defending the Rams' offense?
Yeah, very disappointing. The first thing that come to my mind is Todd Gurley. If I'm coaching the game and they're telling me, okay, coach, they're doubling our best receiver and they've got the best corner matched up against our second guy, you got to get the ball out quick. You either got to run the ball or you got to dump it to your backs and tight ends. Their tight ends are not a factor. Todd Gurley was the number one back in the NFL, as we know, when you combine receptions and rushing. And he was a non-factor. Now, whether he was hurt or they were mad at him or they just forgot that he was on the roster, very disappointing with McVay. Very disappointing in my mind. And you know what? When you look at the formations, you know, I'm watching the game as it's going on. Belichick's coming out and lining up in the I formation. Brady under center. Then he lines up with two tight ends. Then he lines up with three wide receivers and one back. The Rams were really standard as far as the formations that they used. You know, they did not give them much variation, in my opinion, as far as, you know, a lot of stuff to work on. They just tried doing what they've done all year, and it didn't work.
Dave, the defense by the Patriots was so good, and I was a little surprised that they didn't name a defensive MVP just because it was emblematic of how well they had done. I thought Gilmore played really well. I thought that Hightower had a couple of sacks and made some big plays.
Yes, yes.
They have one Pro Bowler on that unit, and yet, you know, Flowers, all these guys play really well together.
They did. They understood the plan, and their defensive line, if you were going to give an MVP to me, I would give it to the defensive front of the Patriots. I mean, I honestly, there weren't very many household names. That's what you're saying, Mike.
Yeah.
There weren't very many household names when you got the sacks. We knew Trey Flowers because he let him in sacks a year ago. But the rest of those guys, they just gave great effort. It was disappointing. Aaron Donald, guys, had six tackles, one solo. No sacks, no quarterback knockdowns, nothing. I mean, they did a great job of eliminating Aaron Donald, and nobody else showed up. Nobody else showed up.
You know, Dave, you're a longtime talent evaluator in the NFL. If you had to project the next 5 years, who has more success, Mitch Trubisky or Jared Goff?
Wow. You know what? I got a theory on this. After watching all these playoff games, I'm convinced that young quarterbacks are playing sooner today. Why? Because the offensive systems have changed, number one. Number two, the rules have changed on offense to give these young kids a chance. I mean, Troy Aikman got knocked in the mouth his first game, like nine sacks or some crazy thing. My point is that these young kids don't get beat up like they used to because of role changes and offensive philosophy. They play sooner. Okay, they play sooner, but when they get down to crunch time, not many of them had great success. So my point is this, between Mitch and Goff, you know what? I think right now, I don't know. I think that Mitch has every bit of an opportunity to be as good or better than Goff, because it's going to come down to development, and both these guys got head coaches that are quarterback guys, that are offensive guys, so you got to assume that they're going to continue to develop these guys. I don't see much difference in the decision-making. I thought Goff, Goff had a guy wide open in the end zone. He gets the ball late to him. He gets knocked away. I mean, he's made decisions like Mitch has. I think both their arm strengths are about the same. Mitch is a little better athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask me long-term who's got a chance, Mitch Trubisky, in my opinion, has every bit as good opportunity to be better 5 years from now than Jared Goff. I really believe that. I truly do.
That's interesting, Dave. What about the weapons around him? I mean, Goff, Cooper Kupp was out, and obviously there was something wrong with the running back. I don't care whether he's on the injury report or not. He barely got as many touches as they had penalties, and they didn't really get him up and running, and they certainly weren't able to throw the ball to him at all.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if a week from now, if the league doesn't come out and come up with something that he should have been on the injured reserve, or not
injured,
he should have been on the injury list or some kind of crazy thing. I mean, you're right. I mean, the Rams offense is a little bit different from the standpoint. Yeah, they're doing the misdirection stuff and a little bit of the RPO stuff, a little bit. But they're more run the ball, pound you, and hit you up over top for a big play. That's kind of their philosophy, where the Bears really are a little bit more, I don't want to say gimmicky, but their Bears are a little bit more high percentage, get the ball out, a little bit more of those screen type things. Now, will it come where they can take more shots? Maybe so. But, I think the offensive philosophies are a little bit different too, the way I see it, at least, from looking at it from the other side of the ball. So, Todd Gurley, with him not playing a week ago against the Saints, I said, this guy's going to be fresh. This guy's going to be angry. This is going to be the difference in the game. And I think I said that to you guys last week. I thought Todd Gurley would be the difference in this game. And he wasn't there for whatever reason.
Hmm. All right, Dave, hold on. We want to ask you about what to expect next year. Does it, just because you had a good year this year, mean that you're going to be back? Are you going to be better? There's a lot of decisions out there. There's a lot of players coming back. Some teams could change dramatically. The Bears were an example of that from 1 year from last year to this year. Will there be another surprise team? We'll ask that of Coach Wannstedt next. It's Mully and Hoe on the Score.
Dave Wannstedt, hanging out with Mully and Hoe.
Mully and Hoe, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Always a delight to talk to Coach Wannstedt. Dave, we're sitting here talking about the Super Bowl and the Bears and all the rest of it. And, I get it. I get why we think the Bears are primed to get back in the playoffs and to make a run, and probably could have done better. But there's always stuff that comes up. And one of the things, as you look around the league, we don't know. Is Cam Newton back? If Cam Newton is repaired, does that change the fortunes of the Carolina Panthers? If indeed Carson Wentz is better than Nick Foles, where does Nick Foles go? What about out in San Francisco? If Jimmy Garoppolo is back, who's the team on your radar now that could pull off what the Bears pulled off, going from kind of worst to first?
Oh boy, you know what? It would be somebody that I think has a quarterback that's right kind of on the edge. You mentioned two or three. You mentioned Cam Newton right there. Obviously, they fell off the map at Carolina, and a lot of people had them, taking it up over the top. I kind of like when
Cleveland.
When you look at quarterback, I think that Josh Allen, look at Buffalo. They got a good running back. They've got a pretty good defense. I mean, they could surprise a few people in that division. The Dolphins are going to be down. Who knows where the Patriots are going to be next year? It's tough to say. Are the Vikings going to regroup? I mean, I know they weren't last, but God, I still think that the Vikings and the Steelers were the two teams that underachieved the most. I don't know. That's a tough one. I think you got to wait till after the draft, and then you got to wait till after free agency, and and see where some of the, where does Antonio Brown end up? Is
right.
he back with the Steelers, or does he leave? You know, that fits into the category you were talking about.
So, Le'Veon Bell, too. I mean, the Steelers could
be Le'Veon Bell. Yeah. Yeah, the Steelers could go from, yeah, I mean, they could go a lot of different directions. And, you know, you've got six new head coaches. You know, are any of these guys going to come in and make an impact like Matt Nagy did right off the bat? I don't know. The biggest thing the Bears got to challenge when you have success like this, and we were talking earlier, Mike and Hani, hey, you know what? Couple things happen. And I've been on teams that have won divisions and come back, won Super Bowls, undefeated national championships. You know, two things usually creep in. You know, one is the whole thing of I'm not getting enough credit. Why are these other guys getting new contracts and I'm not? You got to battle that. The complacency thing is always there. Everybody says they're hungry. I can't wait till next year. It motivated us. But, you know, you go to a Pro Bowl, people are patting you on the back. You're doing speaking engagements. You got to be careful about complacency. You got to be careful about guys saying, I didn't get enough credit. You know, why is he getting all the publicity? Why is he getting the contract? And then the thing you really can't control is the injury thing. I mean, I remember after we won our we won a division my first year at the Dolphins, went 11-5, and we were the favorite to be the AFC team. And Jay Fiedler gets hurt. We're 5-1. We are the team to beat. We're on our way to Super Bowl. We beat Denver, and Jay Fiedler breaks his thumb, and he's out 8 weeks, you know, and we win two of those eight, and we ended up going to the playoffs, but we weren't the same team. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But the one thing is, let me just say this. If you don't have talent, okay, all this stuff means nothing. The Bears have talent. The Bears did not back into anything this year, in my opinion. They earned it. They lined up and they won games. They didn't fall into anything. That gives you a chance going forward.
Dave, with something as delicate as the Kareem Hunt issue will be and has been already for the Bears in the discussion of whether or not they will pursue him, when they make that decision, what role does player input have? Because Allen Robinson over the weekend came out and said the Bears players would welcome Kareem Hunt in their locker room. I don't think that he necessarily speaks for all 53, but he's a strong voice in there. He's a leader. He's a veteran. He's a respected guy. When he says something like that, what effect does it have on the organization? Do they pay attention to what a guy like that would say?
Yes, they would. You know, I was a little bit surprised, you know, that George McCaskey said, oh, we're doing our homework on it, you know, because traditionally the Bears would not even discuss a player like that. I mean, that was but you know what I think is going to happen? I think that the NFL is going to come out with a ruling, or the police, or however they're putting this thing together, they're going to come out with a ruling here very shortly. And if they come out and then they say, hey, you know what, he was wrong, he apologized, he's doing this, it's never happened before, it won't happen again, I think that there could be a lot of takers for him. You know, I mean, I think it could change the whole complexion of it. I think we got to wait and see what the final, you know, summary from the NFL is as far as his status and what's the final verdict on this thing moving forward. And then I think we'll find out how many players there are.
Dave, when you came to the Bears, you were also, I believe, offered the Giants job, but you opted for Chicago for any number of reasons. And I remember Jimmy saying that one of them was that it could affect your friendship with him if you were a division rival. Are you surprised that Brian Flores has no qualms about going down to Miami? And you know, how does that work with Belichick? Is that an issue between the coaches?
No, not at all. And I don't know how many other opportunities that Brian Flores got. You know, maybe this is, I mean, I chose Chicago because I thought it was the best opportunity for me, you know, and yeah, I was fortunate I had a couple other choices, but whether he has other choices, I don't know. And who knows what they told him in those meetings, you know, I mean, there's some, I'm down here in Florida now, and there's some crazy talk about the Bears, you know, or the Dolphins getting rid of Tannehill and trying to bottom out and starting from scratch a year. I mean, so I don't know what they told him in the interview. You know what I mean? Moving forward, you know, they're going to draft Kyler Murray and he's going to start. We're going to get rid of Tan. Who knows what's happened that in his mind he says, you know what, this is a great opportunity for me, I'm going to take advantage of it.
Whether it's Flores or Matt Patricia or any other coordinator under Bill Belichick, how much does he let them coach? I mean, because you watch them move on and because of the association with the greatest coach ever, there is this feeling that they're going to be able to for some of that brilliance. And it doesn't happen a whole lot, Dave. I don't, for various reasons, but does he let the coordinators coordinate? Does he let them be their own guy, or does he meddle a lot?
Well, I think he's on top of everything, you know, but he said after the game that he let Brian Flores was making a few calls, you know. I think he probably lets them make decisions, but the decisions were already kind of laid out in advance. In other words, you know, sometimes this play calling is a little bit overrated. You know, I would go into a game and say, okay, what's our top three third and one calls as an example? Okay, this is the first one, this is the second one, this is the third one. Well, okay, I know it, you know it, all the coaches know it, and the players know it. So when we get in our first third and one, now everybody was being dialed up. You know what I mean? So that's really the way it's done, in my opinion. At least that's the way I did it. So there were really no surprises. Now you get down into the game, and it's the fourth quarter, and it's a critical time, and you've gone through everything, and an unusual situation comes up. We're going to go for it now, but I want to try to throw it. You know, then you get into a little bit of back and forth debate. For the most part, it's pretty laid out with the coordinators and the head coach and all the assistants and the players in advance. Everybody knows what's coming. There should be no surprises.
Dave, we'll let you go just on the way out. The Bears have their first picks in the third round. And what is the philosophy when you go into a draft like that? Are you just looking to fill your biggest need? Are you looking for anything specific, or is it just best player? How do you manage it?
No, you know what? They have needs. And I think Ryan Pace, I mean, you know, the guy, executive of the year, in my opinion, I mean, he knows what he's doing. I think he'll look at this thing, and everyone's going to say, okay, hey, we need an offensive lineman, or we need another big receiver. Well, that may be the case, but he's going to look at it from the standpoint of, do we have a player that's been injured a lot that we might be moving out? Do we have a player that's contract is going to be up the following year and we're not going to be able to afford to pay him? You know, so I think when you're picking like that, when you're picking in the top 10, hey, you got to take an impact player that can win for you now regardless. When you're into the third round, you want to get a guy that can make your team, obviously, number one. And number two is going to be there for a few years and fit in. And that's when the contracts and the injuries and the attitudes of some guys, all these things, in my opinion, become factors in who you choose.
Dave, you're the best. Great year. Really enjoyed talking every week, and it's been tons of fun, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks for everything, Dave.
Yeah, you too. If something comes up on an urgent basis with the Bears or anything, I'm around. Always love going on with you guys. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Dave. God bless. That's Dave Wanstead.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.